Good morning. Thank you for coming this morning. Dawn and I'm very pleased to speak with Dawn because you'll see that we've done many, many things together, and we continue to do that. What I'm going to do, this is what I forgot to do. Steve said 20 minutes, and then he said 20 minutes each, and then he said someone spoke for an hour and a half. So, I've told the people at the table, once the last person leaves, we'll stop talking. We've tried to cram it in, and we'll see how we go. I was born in Sydney at the Mater Hospital. My father was a surgeon and a GP in Lindfield on the North Shore, and my mother was a preschool teacher. She grew up in West Wyalong, and I'm a seventh generation Australian. My parents met in Sydney and got married in Pimble, and I'm the eldest of four, and I have two sisters and a brother, and you can see some of them here. I was christened in the Presbyterian Church. My father grew up in the Anglican, and our Anglican minister said everything comes from Anglicanism anyway, which some people might disagree with. There was something before the Anglican Church, but we won't go there. My father went to Scots College, and he liked Presbyterianism, even though he didn't come to church, but he thought we should go to church. And I don't know whether it was babysitting, but I did enjoy it. My mother pointed out once I got there, but I protested strongly before I got there. I was educated at Sydney Grammar School, and I think I had the premier educator of the time, who was Alistair McKerris, who was trained at Oxford. And he said that a gentleman could not only debate knowledge, but fight with a sword. And he pushed all-roundism, and in fact he started an orchestra at Sydney Grammar, and I think that promoted the academic standard as well. Like my father, ever since I can remember, everyone said, are you going to be a doctor like your daddy? And being a three-year-old, I said no. But when I got there, there were two things I was good at. One was biology, which I surprised myself. I topped the school, which I'd never done before. And the other was geography. And I figured that, I liked biology better than geography, so I ended up doing this. But then I joined the rural training scheme. I'd spent time at my grandparents' place. And the local doctor had four kids, or the local doctors, and at West Wyalong, and they'd come out for picnics. And I was thinking, gee, it'd be really good. You could have all your holidays and all your work all together. And so I'd always decided that a rural medicine was better. But then I did some rural terms, one in West Wyalong and one in Scone, and suddenly realised you needed more skills, and you couldn't study anaesthetics for general practice in Australia at that time. So I went to the UK. And we'll do this.
My father was a GP, and my mum didn't work. She was looked after the children. Both my parents were from Northern Ireland, so that was a very big part of my growing up, going over to Northern Ireland and meeting up with family over there, because that's where my parents' families lived. and it was always a very warm, loving atmosphere when we went over there and met up with them. I only have one brother, he's quite a bit older than me, so I'd say I probably grew up a little bit of an only child, because in my young years he was at school, and then when I got to about age 10, he had actually left home and gone off to university because he went up 17. So although I'm quite close to him now, the age gap was quite big as we were growing up. I was brought up in a church called Brethren, Open Brethren Church, and it was strict, but in the way that women were not really allowed to take part in services. It was very much men-based, but it was very biblically-based, and I did enjoy the fact that it has I've memorised a lot of scripture because of that. I actually made a decision about the age of 8 to my life to Christ, and I think that background is a very strong part of my life. My parents' faith was very strong, they were very strong Christians, and I was really blessed in that respect. I went to a school in Bolton, which was about 10 miles away, but it involved two buses because you had to cross the county boundary. So it took about an hour, even though it was only 10 miles, so it was quite a long way away, but it was a very good school, and again, I was very blessed to be educated there. I decided to do medicine. My father took me on home visits occasionally, and he often took me into his workplace, and I really seemed to enjoy the time I spent with him when he did that. So that had probably come about the age of 13. That's when I changed my mind. I wanted to be a vet initially, and then decided, no, I would prefer to do medicine. It did take me a couple of tries, but I finally got in to the Royal Free Hospital in London, and that's where I studied medicine. And that's a picture of me, actually. We didn't graduate with our proper mortar board. This was like our individual. There were about 10 medical schools in London. So there I am in the middle, but I don't have all the official degrees on at my graduation.
Okay, so I think one of the things that has affected us, and we feel that God's hand has been on our lives all along, and I've only realised that in retrospect. I think Dawn's realised that more because she had a very biblical upbringing. But Dawn had a favourite verse that she brought into our marriage, and do you want to read that?
Yeah, so this verse, I think I first became aware of it when I went to the university. Our Christian union there had a very musical, and they actually made it into a song with verse. It's Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. So that's probably from the time when university became a special verse to me, and all through my life it's one I come back to. And then as a couple who we have found it, has given us a lot of encouragement.
As I've gone through life, I've appreciated more and more what's in the Bible, and I now believe that there are no accidents in the universe. It seems like the earthquake in Alaska this morning was a catastrophe, but God, even though mishaps happen and things, God has actually orchestrated the life of the whole universe. And although it doesn't always go the way we want it to go, and we would choose otherwise, I don't actually think there's any accidents. And I think that verse has spoken very strongly to me. So I did obstetrics in Reading, and I could have done that in Australia, but I wanted to research my family history, which was, I think, the way God got me to go to England. But then I needed to do anaesthetics for rural medicine, and I couldn't do that in Australia. My father wanted me to just be a specialist anaesthetist because he said specialists are better, and I said, I don't want to be a specialist, I want to be a generalist. And no, I said I wanted to do rural practice, and rural practice involves being a generalist, which is what we realise now. Dawn graduated and did her medical jobs in Shrewsbury, And then surgery at, guess where? The best man at our wedding said our eyes met over an intensive care bed. Richard is very good with words. Dawn joined the general practice scheme in Southampton. I was going to come home, but after I met Dawn, I decided I'd do something different. And we were blessed. I went to the trainer. I just lobbed in Southampton and said, I've only got to do 1 year of my general practice training left. There was reciprocity between the Royal College of GPs in England and the Royal College of GPs in Australia, and so I could transfer my training from one to the other. And I just lobbed in and I said, oh, do you have any training positions? He said, oh, I'm sorry, there's only one left. It's in the middle of the New Forest. I thought, you're kidding. So that was my dream job. There was only one person in the whole of the New Forest who was a trainee, and I got it for a year. It was a beautiful place. And we ended up getting married at one of the places where we had surgery at Sway. And you can see our little wedding party up the top there, up here. We both gained our fellowships in London, it was only a few months after that that Tim was born in Southampton.
No,
it wasn't. Okay.
Okay, so this was the next adventure, really, for me especially. Rob had tried to look at getting a job in England, but it just didn't seem to be working out. You find several jobs, but you say, but then didn't get a job. And really, his training had prepared him for if he were here in Australia. If he had worked in England, he would probably have got to use his specialist in Australia. So really, I think God has prepared him to come back here. I didn't know that at the time when I first met him, but and my parents were not, of course, terribly happy with the idea. But Rob's sister sent us this little advertisement to come to Cooma, and she put a little smiley beside it. Place to come, because I didn't know anything about Cooma. I'd only been to Australia once before, and it had been very, very hot in the middle of summer. So we arrived in Cooma July 1991 with a baby, and it was freezing. And I thought, goodness, I don't have enough clothes to put on this baby, I need to put layers and layers on it so it's stay warm. But anyway, it took time, I'd say, probably around 2 years for me to settle here. I got quite home. They actually came out, was it about 18 months after we came? That's probably when they came and visited. We initially rented a house in Mullet Street, and again, there was trouble with the heating and it's freezing.
Insulation was newspaper.
Yeah, right.
You could see it because you could look down the walls, and because the architrave didn't meet up, so you could look along the walls and see the newspaper.
I read the newspaper.
We were too busy, didn't have time to read newspapers.
And Rob joined the Sharp Tooth Surgery. At that time, there was a doctor here called Dr. Sam, who went to see the summer sequence. And he worked with Dr. Bob Engelbrecht, and he was desperate. He'd been working really hard, and he actually also had got another doctor to come and start at the same time as Rob. So it meant at the beginning, because it's often word of mouth that makes people come, to talk to the doctor. It took a bit of a while, but once Rob got known, he got busier and busier, and it was very busy with him all too, because the way he was taught lots of work, and he was doing lots of anesthetics, and anesthetic, and it was pretty hectic. We took a while to find our church family. We actually had a couple of people who said, go to this church, go to that church, so I think we went around all the different churches about twice, really. And I was a bit torn. I'd meet some women from the Anglican Church. I actually joined their mother's group to begin with, but we finally decided to join the Baptist Church. So that's where we've been worshipping since we've been here. We bought a house in Church Road, which was close enough for Rob, so he was getting quickly to the hospital if he needed to. But we felt we just had a little bit of space around us, and we really liked that.
The person who married us, Dawn particularly wanted someone called Canon Bob. He was Canon Bob Smith. He'd been a missionary in South America to marry us. And Canon Bob was one of the most special people I've ever met. Sometimes you'll see someone and you can imagine that it's Jesus talking to you. And he had the most amazing eyes. He was a really kind person. And he always had a really gentle word to say to you, no matter what you'd done wrong. But he gave us a verse at our wedding, and I've never forgotten it, and it's from Ruth, and it says, but Ruth replied, don't ask me to leave you and turn back. Wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. And that's been the story of our life. And Canon Bob is... we often remember him. He's died now of mesothelioma, unfortunately. But he was when you see someone so extraordinary, you really want to get to know them really well. Okay. So I started at the Sharp Street surgery on the 1st of August 1991. I still remember. It was dark, it was cold, and it was very busy. I was on call for the hospital. We did a 1 in 2. The doctors now are complaining because we're finding it very busy with even 10-hour shifts now. It's cut back, hasn't it? But at that stage, we used to do Friday, Saturday, Sunday on call. And when Andy West went on holidays, you did a 1 in 1. So you did obstetrics, anaesthetics, the emergency, the practice, and the community all yourself for 2 weeks. And that nearly killed us. So we then decided that you're only allowed 1 week holiday at a time until we got more doctors. It wasn't nearly as busy as it is now, but it was terrible. So Dawn worked in Canberra initially because at that stage overseas trained doctors, unless you were from New Zealand, had to in New South Wales had to sit their AMEC exams, which is like doing your finals all over again, and you've got to go back to all your preclinical stuff, which is we don't use in general practice, but pathology and a whole lot of things like that, which doctors who have got their fellowships have forgotten a lot of that because we never use it and find it hard. You've got to go and back and study again for stuff that you probably won't ever use again. And so Dawn worked in Canberra because she could work in any state of Australia except New South Wales. And so Dawn worked there and in a practice, a couple of practices, until in 1993, excuse me, they brought in national registration, and Dawn got grandfathered into the national scheme because she had unrestricted registration in the ACT. Then she could start working in Cooma, which was really, really useful because we were so short on doctors. And then in 1993, Andy West bowled in one day. He wasn't one who talked a lot. And said, oh, by the way, we're getting a GP registrar. And you're the teacher. I said, oh, okay. That was the consultation. He, as a senior partner, told us what we were doing. We didn't have practice meetings. He just told us. I thought, what do I know about teaching? He said, oh, well, you've done your fellowship only a few years ago. You'll be right. And strangely, I discovered I liked it, which I never thought I wouldn't have ever done it, except he dumped me in it. Then suddenly in 1995, he left town, and I became a senior partner. Now, in England, you don't become a senior partner until you're about 60 or 70 or 80, and sometimes you never get there because someone before you stays there longer than you want to stay. And at 35, I was thinking, I don't know anything about running a practice. I haven't got a clue. And so I had to then go off and study business. My father had tried to teach me when I was a child and I didn't want to learn, because which child wants to learn about bookkeeping and economics and business? But my father could see ahead And so I went and did a crash course in practice management with our then practice manager, and we gradually built the practice. In England, we worked with a number of returned missionaries, and they always said, you shouldn't work in a Christian practice, you should be Christians in practice. And so that was the model that we brought, because that was the general recommendation. The trouble is that Brian Tugwell came along, and then David Learoyd came along, and then Sue Rainsford came along. And then this fellow, he turned up one day, and he said, hello, you don't know me, we were advertising all the time because we were so short on doctors, but no one ever answered the ads. I got Brian because our accountant, Chris Kloster, said, oh, I might have a doctor for you. I said, oh yeah, where is he? He said, Gove. I said, oh, okay, that's very close. he said, oh no, he's wanting to move. His wife's a doctor. Oh yes, that sounds really good. I said, oh, when are they coming? He said, oh, about 18 months' time. Oh, that's a long way away. But anyway, I said, who is it? He said, oh, you wouldn't know them. And he said, who is it? He said, oh, it's someone called Brian Tugwell. I was best man at their wedding. I said, Brian Tugwell? I said, I know Brian Tugwell. He played soccer against my little brother. And wait for it. His mother was my mother's bridesmaid. So the Tugwells, she was a harvest and came from Tumut. And her father was a doctor in Tumut. So Brian came to Cooma with Effie, and they had one son already. That was great. And then there was this fellow called David Learoyd. I met David Learoyd at a wine and cheese in the Anderson Stewart building in 1978, in our first week in medicine at Sydney University. And I don't know what drew me to David, but he's got one or two likeable characteristics. And David went off and became a missionary. He met Ali and they went off to Papua New Guinea. And he'd come back from time to time, and I was trying to twist his arm to come to Cooma because we were still desperate. And he said, no, we're going to Tumut. There's a Christian practice over there and a very nice Christian doctor. And anyway, I won't go into all the details. David can tell you when he gives this talk. David and Ali came to Cooma, and that was wonderful. Then Sue Rainsford turned up, and I'd been talking to her in the tea room for 3 months and found out she was a Christian. And then, but we were advertising, and all these people came by word of mouth. We didn't get one doctor answer an ad that we ran. We ran ads for 5 or 10 years. And so we decided it was absolutely useless trying to put out ads. No one answered them. There's always been at least 1,500 places in rural medicine in Australia for doctors who graduate today who want to go into rural medicine. And so they can choose anywhere. So we decided, well, all the doctors in the practice have actually pretty well turned out to be Christians, even though we didn't choose them. Maybe God's trying to tell us something. So the next ad we put out was for a Christian doctor. And this person turned up, and he said, oh, the other practice sent me up. They said that this is the place I should be applying. And we said, hello, yes, what's your name? He said, my name's Christian. And Christian was fantastic. Grew up in the Lutheran church in South Australia, and unfortunately he decided he wanted to become a Lutheran pastor, and now he does medicine on the side. So Christian and his wife, beautiful people. Then along came Christine Human, and Sean Truter lobbed out of the ether, really. They answered and they found the ad. What was it, about 5 years later, after we'd run this ad, we didn't even know about it, and they found the ad for a Christian doctor from South Africa. They were just searching the internet and somehow found it and contacted Brian. So this practice, we didn't do anything. God did it. So this is what I mean about God has his hand on you. All right.
So we have a little girl, Amy, who is now 20
We specialise in redheads. Skipping across, we joined Cooma Baptist Church in 1991, as Dawn said, although we had friends in all the churches. In 1992, Heather Bolton, who was one of the elders in the Baptist Church, suggested that maybe we'd like to join a Bible study, and she suggested we hold it in our house, so she led it and we hosted it in 1992, and that started us on a ministry road in Cooma. Dawn joined the CWCI, which is Christian Women Communicating International, under Adrian Lesleiter, who a lot of you might know, Eric and Adrian, that was in 1993, and then the church, the Cooma Baptist Church, was growing, and it outgrew the little church built in 1972, and had the chance to buy the education centre for the Snowy Hydro. They were selling off in 1994, but it came with 3 acres of land, and no one quite knew what to do with it initially. Dawn joined Varel Carlson, who was the wife of the pastor, to lead worship in 1995. Dawn loves singing, and is very good at it. Then I got invited onto this committee, and it was a silly thing to do, but someone who'd been to the Nowra Christian School said they had been given a vision for a Christian school in Cooma. I'd never heard of a Christian school, and having grown up in Sydney, and they said they thought that the Cooma Baptist Church should sponsor it, and I said, oh, that's good, okay. But then I remember it was Easter, and this person lobbed up and said, I've got to fill out all these statistics, and I've got a deadline, it's 1 week, and I don't know how to do the statistics, and I know you can do them. And I thought, oh, just what I need. We didn't have... Brian and David didn't arrive till 1997, and we were desperately short on doctors, but I said, all right, I'll just do the statistics, I'm not going to do anything else. And so we submitted that, and it was accepted, so I got on the investigating committee, because then the church wanted to know all about this, and I didn't know anything about education. The other thing that we've done, looking at ministry in Cooma much later, the Christian Medical and Dental Fellowship of Australia, Dawn and I have belonged to that. The CMF is in England, a Christian Medical Fellowship, and I don't know how old is that. It must be decades old, 50 years old or more. They made up a lot of medical missionaries. And so when we came out here, they gave us a referral to the CMDFA, and we went along to that from a long time ago. Because of the medical students, we had some Christian medical students came down, and they decided that it would be really beneficial for the medical students at ANU if they could all get together. And so they organised the students who were in first, second, third and fourth year at ANU to come down for 1 weekend a year, and it's called the Cooma Breakaway. We've run it for about 4 years now. And the students love it. It's not many students. There's only about 2 students per year, roughly. But it breaks a lot of the students don't see in the years above and below, and that helps them network at the university. And that gives them courage, confidence, that there's other people there, because as you probably realise, there's the anti-Christian push, especially at universities, is growing stronger. But that's just something we've been doing, and this is our little CMDFA group from a year or two ago, and some of the doctors from Canberra come down. And we've got our local homegrown doctors as well. Okay. So, yes, what I thought was just doing some statistics help someone out, turn into something else. I got on this organising committee, and a fellow called John Vanderhout, who had been through Cornerstone, he and his family had come to Cooma to set up a Cornerstone here with another family. And John saw the potential in a Christian school, and he sort of spearheaded the investigation, and we ended up actually calling we tried to start in 1996, and we had 17 children promised, but six turned up, and we decided it wasn't going to work, and we didn't start in 1996. But in 1997, we called a teacher who had been at the Christian school in Taree, and he was head of the middle school, and he put on his ad that he and his wife had a vision to start a Christian school. The only problem was it was in Queensland, and Jeff and his wife came down, and they graciously talked to us, and before they told us that they were going to Queensland. But the investigating committee here was absolutely sure that these were the right people, and this is one of the most remarkable things that I'd seen until that time. We had a church family meeting one Sunday afternoon, and Kevin Carlson, our pastor, said we were the only people in the church he knew of who had a fax, and he said, at the church service on Sunday morning, "I think we need to ask Jeff again." And I said, but he said categorically no. And he said, "I think we need to ask them again." He said, "Would you ask them?" I said, "Okay, Kevin. To please you, I will do it." And then we had a church family meeting that afternoon. And we'd rushed home with four kids, and not four kids, we only had three at that stage. Had to give them lunch and then rush back to the church family meeting that afternoon. And Kevin said, "Did you fax him? Did you fax him?" I said, "Kevin, I haven't any time." And he said, "Please fax him." And I said, "Okay, Kevin." So when we went home, the first thing I did was I typed out a letter and I faxed it to him. About 5 minutes later, I get a phone call. This is Sunday afternoon. And he said, "Hello, it's Jeff Wainwright." And I said, "Hello, Jeff." And I thought, what have I done wrong? And he said, "I got your fax." I said, "How did you get the fax?" Because I knew he lived 10 miles from the school. It was Sunday afternoon and he was leaving. And he said, "Well, I was just cleaning up some stuff at the school." And he's going to make me cry. It does every time. I was cleaning up some stuff at the school and I was just walking past the fax and I saw the fax, so I looked at it and I saw your letter. And he said, "Now, you don't know this," he said, "but..." It was Gail, wasn't it? He said, "Gail and I put out a fleece and we said, if you want us..." They prayed to God, if God, "if you want us to go to Cooma, they will ask again." And nobody knew that, but Kevin badgered me until I asked. And that's why we know that this is God's school. Now, that doesn't mean that God isn't in every other Christian school in Australia, because I'm sure he is. But this school is there because God wanted it. So the school did begin in 1997, and Tim swapped over from Cooma Public. We had 16 children, one teacher, and we started K to 6. It grew to K to 8 with Phil Horniman, and the Snowy Mountains Christian School band started, and that was amazing. If you've got children or grandchildren, teach them music. Get them to learn music. Macaris knew it. His brother was a conductor of the London Philharmonic Orchestra. But the children learn, and there's more research came out about 2 months ago on the rate that children learn. They did a research project on... did you tell me about this? They took a group of children and they did intensive music training with them, and they had a control group in the same school. And then they looked at the NAPLAN results between the children that had done music and the children who hadn't, and the difference was astronomical. And all they did was they had extra music tuition. It accelerates learning, and we don't quite know how it is, but my headmaster, Vakaris, was a mathematician. He said there's a link between mathematics and music, and no one quite knows what it is. Anyway, we had new classrooms, teachers, an oval, sports and choirs and plays and debating and public speaking. And the Christian teaching is throughout the whole program. And it's most important that your teachers walk the walk and they talk the talk. And there's a lot of national debate going on at the moment. If your teachers and if the children are sponges and they soak up what they see, not what they hear. They listen to what they hear, but they'll soak up what they see. And if your teachers don't walk the walk and talk the talk, they won't take up the principles of Christianity. And this is what I believe our secular society is trying to destroy. So it's most important, the debate that's going on at the moment. All right.
Very reluctant, I'll put it that way. But the first time that we went to, what happened, Rob?
When Tim was born, I decided, with a scientific background, we were going to bring up this child in a scientific way. So the first thing I did was bought the best parenting magazine I could find in England, and I read it from cover to cover. And I thought, great, okay, we'll start doing this. So then I bought the one the following month, thinking, okay, what's next? And the main article in the second one advised exactly the opposite of what the main article in the first one had recommended. And I decided, right, that's the last parenting magazine I'm going to read. And we never bought another one. So when Dawn said, oh, there's this parenting program, I thought, no way. So I came to it kicking and screaming. But the Vanderhouts wanted a thing called a pilot group, and there were other people like the Leroyds there. And it was the most amazing thing. We got 40 minutes into the first talk, and I thought, this is something else. This is not an ordinary parenting program. And it's the most extraordinary thing I have ever taught. It really is.
So once we have done that course, I think we did it again, and then the family has left the council, and we sort of, in a way, responsible for teaching it. So we did training. Started on groups, and there were other couples. I think at one stage there were probably about 5 couples teaching. We reckon there were about 165 children that got influenced, I guess, through the course. We thought probably about 50 to 60 families. So it did reach, this was in those early days, and our church, probably most of the families within our church, probably were influenced by the course. So it was quite a long course, quite intensive, very university based. Some of the principles and the things they use, not everyone would agree with. As with parenting, that's the way it goes. But I think for families that are, I think one of the best things is that both parents get on the same page. Because often you come from different backgrounds, and you're not sure how to do it, you're not sure. And sometimes fighting against each other, and then the kids pick that up. So yeah, we just found that very helpful. The other program, Baileywise, is something that helps. They send out the Christian side, the Christian part of it, and they produce books called Baileywise. And we found it so helpful for young mums that our surgery society will actually give and they certainly found it very helpful. And then also they launched Child Eyes, and because of this way that we use the book through the surgery, the leaders in Australia said, well, why don't we launch Child Eyes book in Puma? And we were quite surprised because Puma isn't really the centre of Australia. Anyway.
Centre of the universe, but not the capital of Australia.
So the Ezo, who wrote the course, the American couple, came over to launch the book, and we ran it in the Function Centre in 2003. So it was all very exciting. We're actually still involved. I know we're getting a bit old now, but we still are involved with teaching and a newest programme called Parenting from the Field of Life, and we've actually just finished running the group, which has been quite interesting because we had a couple from Sydney, because they weren't running the group from Sydney this time, but they Skyped in every week. So that shows that technology can be used, and it's just interesting that it's the Kuma group that Sydney people are joining rather than the other way around. So, yeah, it's all been very exciting. We just really feel it has helped us with things that we were struggling with our own faith, to be able to, just some of the things that we learn are very practical, and we really feel that's helped us with us bringing our children up. We're very thankful that the children have all come to know Christ themselves, their own faith, and that's a picture there of Amy, that's one of the baptized by the in the language you love, so each of the children there have been baptized there. That's a real blessing for us.
So I see this as the product of the Growing Kids God's Way really has impacted our family, and we think it's impacted a lot of families. And if your grandchildren get the chance to be influenced by it, I think it's very powerful.
I think you're choosing life over death there, isn't it?
Yes, with the storm clouds in the background, yes. That was Judy Goggin thought that was very artistic. So, but I like the photo. But these are our four beautiful children, and they're all going to church at the moment. They all attend Bible studies, and we'll get to a bit more of it in a minute. So then along came the ANU. In 2002, I gave up obstetrics. There was I've found obstetrics a little bit stressful, and anaesthetics at that stage. We had too many anaesthetists, and I wasn't getting enough anaesthetics lists. And you can get very rusty because rural medicine, you've got to know everything about everything all of the time. As medicine has become more complex, it's become very onerous. And that's why we have specialisation, because no one can know everything all of the time, but rural doctors have to anyway. That's why David's so amazing, because he still does it. I knew that the university was starting up a medical school, and I'd got to like teaching, especially the registrars, and so I did more registrar teaching, but it involved a lot of travel. I was going to Maruya and Goulburn and Young, and I'd be exhausted before you get there, and then you'd have to supervise the trainee doctor and then come home again. And that with a family and everything else, and plus on call here, I was finding it too much and something had to give. So I dropped my obstetrics and anaesthetics. I knew that in 2006 the rural teaching was going to start in Cooma, and then I was doing undergraduate and postgraduate teaching, and then that was killing me too. So I dropped the undergraduate, and Brian took that up, dropped the registrar, the postgraduate, and Brian's doing that, and I'm doing the undergraduate now, which I love. But I love all the teaching. The rural weeks are great, and you've possibly seen the students all around the town for the last 10 years or so, 12 years for first years. We take them to the snow, which you can see here. They get some fled. The first year's walked to the top of Mount Kosciuszko. That's one of the rare times when you can see blue sky. Often we get to the top of Kosciuszko, they turn around and come back because you can't eat any sandwiches up there. They'll blow away before it gets to your mouth. Or you can't see it for the fog. But the students come for a whole year in third year, obstetrics in fourth year for a little bit, and they're now trying to get more training into the region, because although they put millions of dollars into rural training, it's not turning into rural doctors on the ground. And there's a whole lot of reasons for that we won't go into here, but they're trying to get more training outside the cities. If the students go to the city, they get a network in the city, and then they then get settled in the city and they don't come back. And so at one stage, after they've been running these programs for more than 10 years, they looked at the 25% of the Australian population lives in a rural area, but only 2% of the medical graduates were actually settling and practicing in rural areas. And so that's never going to replace itself. We now have, and you've probably seen it in the paper, we've been trying for 6 years to get a new teaching facility at the hospital, and they're going to start in February. Our $6 million building, I can't believe they're spending so much on one little building, but it's a reality, and it's going to be in conjunction with the University of Canberra, and they're going to bring down physios and pharmacists. There'll probably be more nursing training, although there's some at the hospital already, obstetrics, social work, a whole lot of allied health training will happen in the region through the University of Canberra, through this joint training facility with the ANU, and I'm very excited about it. And the UC is on board now as well, and that's going to be really good for our health system and the town. All right.
So I'm also working on a bit of a different training path. So I think it's just given me a lot more tools rather than just writing a script for an antidepressant or whatever. Particularly anxiety is something that it can be done, you know, a little bit with antidepressants, but it's really not the best way to help someone with anxiety. It's more teaching them skills to learn how to just deal with their thoughts and what's going on there and relaxation techniques. So I'm now doing a master's in pastoral counseling through St Mark's Theological College in Canberra, which has been very stretching, and Rob will tell you this is assignment that I had to do, but really interesting as well. So it's sort of combining the counseling and theology and putting the two together. So that's been really exciting as well.
Dawn won't tell you, but she's got an HD in almost every assignment. Yeah, that's why I married her, because she's brilliant. No, it's not. Okay, so God has brought us on a lot of different tracks. And in 2005, I was on call to the practice, and I couldn't go to Cyril Rocks when the family was there. And I was sitting at home on my own because it was a... forgotten what it was, but I had nothing else at the time, and I listened to the tapes of the Ezos from the Growing Families Conference in South Australia, which we hadn't gone to. And on one of the tapes, Gary Ezo challenged us to pray to God, to ask him to show us our life's purpose. Now, I warn you, don't do that lightly. But it's amazing. So I sat there and prayed for an hour or two, and I said, God, what have you really put me here for? Yes, we've been involved with a whole lot of things, and we work in the practice, and God gave me, at that time I was struggling how to explain Darwinian evolution to our son. Most people don't realise, but... The Bible and Darwinian evolution, there is a conflict. And I'd already always realised there was one, and I didn't know how I was going to explain it to Tim. Teenagers can spot hypocrisy from 1,000 miles. And I knew Tim was smart enough to spot it because his mum's smart. And and I was struggling with how I would explain that I believe the Bible's true, but Darwinian evolution happened, and I couldn't work it out. And God gave me this picture of a stake, a star picket, and I said, what's the star picket? And I believe God told me that's information. I was looking for something that was common to everyone, that everyone could identify with and say, yes, we agree. Because if you're a scientist, most scientists do not agree that the Bible is true in its, you know, entirety. And if you're a Christian, a lot of Christians say the Bible is true and everything else is false by definition. It comes back to yes it is, no it isn't, and that doesn't get you very far. I was looking for something that you could get agreement with, that we could argue from. And God gave me the idea of information. We live in the information age, and everyone I think will agree that there is such a thing as information. And it went from there. I wrote a paper. My sister's a professor at the University of Queensland in intelligent systems. I can't remember the title. She's got such a big title. She builds smart robots, she's got a huge team. But she'd had a paper published in Nature magazine recently with a group she was working in California. And I thought, okay. This is a really good idea. I'll just submit a paper to Nature magazine. And she said, my sister believes in Darwinian evolution and doesn't believe in God. And so she said she thought that she would take me on at this. And she said, all right, write a paper, and she would read it for me because she supervises PhD students. And so I wrote this paper on why Darwinian evolution couldn't create the first cell. And it went back and forwards by email for 7 months. And in the end, I said, what's wrong with it? She said, I don't know what's wrong with it. I said, do you believe it? And she said, no. And so at that stage, she couldn't disprove my thesis, so I submitted it to Nature magazine. But my sister knew it wouldn't be published. She knew a lot more about it because she's in the academic community. And she said, well, this is how you do the submission. She helped me with everything. She said the record for rejection is 8 minutes. So one of her students had submitted a paper and 8 minutes later got the rejection. And so she was trying to break it easily to me. So I waited 8 minutes and I didn't hear a thing. I waited 8 hours and I didn't hear anything. I waited 8 days and I'd submitted it to London. I had to go in on the internet. I got an email back from Boston in America, and it said, we got your submission. And they didn't discuss it in detail. They said, it's not really what we publish. We publish research, and this wasn't research because I hadn't done any trials. That was their definition. They said, sometimes we publish public interest papers, but we don't think this subject will interest our reading public. And I just proved that Darwinian evolution was wrong. Well, macroevolution is wrong. You must realise that Darwinian evolution has three bits, and one third is true, and that's the bit you always get quoted, and two of the strands of it are extrapolations, and you can't prove them, and I believe that with an information audit you can prove that they're not right. Okay, so Darwinian evolution is true, and so be very careful if you take someone on, but I'll talk to anyone about it afterwards if you like. If I brought down Darwinian evolution, they would all be sacked. And someone had been sacked from the AAAS, the American Association of Science. Their editor had published a paper in 2004 that was peer-reviewed. It was the basis of a PhD from Cambridge University in England, and it was on the Cambrian explosion, showing that there were no precursors to the... in the fossil record, there's no precursors to most of the types of organisms that we find in fossil record. And so Darwinian evolution has no evidence for where everything came from. It just appeared. Yep, I'll keep going. But... So this was accepted as a PhD at Cambridge. It was peer-reviewed, it was published, and the editor was sacked because they shouldn't have published it. I was wondering, this is such a weird idea. I wanted a reality check and to know whether this idea was actually... My mother used to say, if it's too good to be true, it probably isn't. And this was too good to be true, and I thought, I need to know whether I'm just crawling up my own ladder off in the wilderness. And I was looking for someone, and I picked the two people that the books that I admired most. And they were both professors from England. One didn't answer, and the other one I didn't know how to contact, which was John Lennox. And we went over to England because Dawn's mother got ill in 2010, and we were with one of her cousins in the Midlands. And I was speaking to John McEwen about my book because he was interested. And I said, oh, I'm just not sure what to do next because I'm just not sure this is valid. And I said, but I approached two people, and I don't know how to approach John Lennox. And he said, oh, John Lennox, you want to speak to John Lennox? I can get you to speak to John Lennox. I said, you can. He said, yes, he's my best friend. 3 days later, we got in John's car and drove to Oxford, and I had a morning to present my thesis to John Lennox, which was stunning. This is where God steps in. No one could organise this. It just happened. I didn't plan it. I never dreamed of it. And he was really helpful in things like nomenclature. The information paradox was published in 2014.
We then reached the next stage of our parenting, which is when you go. And I found it quite a new stage, I think. I think a lot of my energy has been invested into the children as my parents at the time. And this was when it started. Tim went off to ANU to, and he wanted to get into medicine.
He actually wanted to do comedy.
Yeah, comedy was really good, but
I got into research the income of comedians, and he found out in the previous year the average comedian in Australia earned $400 gross. Tim likes eating out, and it wouldn't pay anything. So he just changed his mind. Another God incident. No, thought we'd never get you, did you? The future. So we've got one or two ideas for the future. Dawn's part of the pastoral care ministry at Cooma Baptist Church, and so that keeps her rather busy. I've written a new book called The Mind and the Matrix, The Origin of Meaning, because the biggest problem we perceive, because Dawn does a lot of mental health, in the young people, we're getting a tsunami of young people who don't have any meaning in their lives. And there's it actually came out 2 days ago. Mission Australia did a survey of something like 28,000 young people across Australia, and 72% identified. It wasn't a checklist; it was just a free write. You know, just lines. Write down the things that concern you most. 72% identified that anxiety and depression were significant to them. That's young people across Australia, and that's right across the breadth of Australia, and 28,000 young people is a large number. And we're just experiencing in the surgery the burden of mental health in the young is huge. So the mind in the matrix is looking at the origin of meaning, and you can guess it, the only origin of meaning is God. But I'll tell you that later, otherwise I'll get another tap on the shoulder. But I love apologetics. We'll be continuing to work at the Sharp Street Surgery, continuing our parenting of life. We're going to the National Conference in Perth in January. We're very intrigued by using the Skype to teach across vast distances. The tyranny of distance is something I teach the medical students. It's a big problem in rural Australia, but you can use it for all the different disciplines. Is to use the modern technology. Dawn's been involved with another thing. She's been to this bushfire orphanage in Uganda a couple of times. The AIFC actually have a training school in in Uganda, and for Christian counselling, and we feel led to sponsor a child for in medicine to study in Uganda, because the needs for medical care in Uganda are huge. This is another accident. These couple took in some orphans from HIV parents, and just looking after strays. And it's now, how many children are
there? There was 100 that actually lived there, and then 400
days
now. So they run a school, and
then
have like
400
for 100
to the street. And then they've got to find something. So now they've started like a TAFE, and they're putting in, some of the people here have gone and put in solar panels and a workshop to give them skills, and then they're starting carpentry shops and stuff like that to support them. They've got a farm to feed 400 mouths every day. It's a huge undertaking, but God makes it happen. But there's the one nurse and Dawn's been overworking in the clinic there, and they're in desperate need of medical help. So we feel we'd like to do this. I'm now the chair of the Christian School Board. I didn't want the job, but it's a very worthwhile ministry. The other thing is that Christian Medical Dental Fellowship of Australia has a conference every second year, and for the first time they're going to run it in Canberra in October next year. And somehow I got to be the co-chair. I didn't want that job either. But we're going to do something different, where we not only look at the doctors, the Christian doctors and dentists, but we're reaching out to the Christian nurses, the Christian physios, the Christian pharmacists, all the allied health, and we want to make a Christian health conference, and we want the CMDFA to be the NIDUS that's going to grow a Christian health fraternity or organisation for Australia. And the other organisations are very excited, and I think that will be wonderful when we get there. So that's just a little snippet of what we do. Dawn's just got something here from our very special Canon Bob.
Canon Bob wrote this little book. O Lord, help me not to fear the past, for you have given it all. Keep me from fearing the present, for you have promised. As your day, so will your strength be. Preserve me from fearing the future, for you are already there. We ask it in our Lord's precious name. Amen.
So, thank you very much. As you probably realise that we don't think God's something that's a nice idea. We believe God is real, and we hope God is real to you. If you want to talk afterwards, we'd be delighted to talk to you. So thank you.
There are too many answers that Rob will be able to give you. Is it on?
Yes, I'm on.
Okay, there we go. So, my name's David Learoyd.
Thank you, Rob, for giving me such a wrap
on several occasions doing that. I'm just going to sort of give a word of thanks. Have you ever felt like you were a victim? A victim of God and God's people? Well, certainly that's the reason that Ali and I are here, because we were victims of Rob and Dawn's prayers. And that's what brought us to Kuna. So we thank you, Rob and Dawn, for making us your victims. Anyway, one of the things that Rob didn't say was that when he and Dawn met, that Dawn gave him an ultimatum, because Rob wasn't actually a Christian at the time that they met. And Dawn gave him an ultimatum: if you don't become a Christian, I'm not going to marry you. So I thank you, Dawn, for your strength and your wisdom and your staunchness, I think that's one of the staunchness isn't the most endearing quality, but it is a quality that Dawn has. And so it was that quality of staunchness or whatever that determined that Rob would investigate, as he does on a scientific level, everything that he looks at, and sort of turn to Christ and gave his life there. And the rest, as they say, is history. What he didn't realise when he went to research his family tree is that he'd be in the UK, that he'd be creating his own little branch of the family, which they have done together. So, you know, most people would have thought that being a country GP, I'm not going to speak quite as long as they were. being a country GP was enough, you know, doing obstetrics and anaesthetics and running a family and four children and, you know, being involved in counselling and all that sort of thing, but not for Rob and Dawn, you know. So why not write a book or two? Why not run a school? Why not, you know, sort of do a parenting program? Why not become, you know, a master of counselling? And they say if you've got a job to do, then you ask a busy person. So you ask a busy couple. And I know that despite being a victim of God's, you know, invitation or whatever it is that we were being, that Ali and I have been enormously blessed by being a part of life with Rob and Dawn. Rob has an amazing gift of insight and perception. We meet once a week, on average, or perhaps less than on average, but anyway, we meet on average weekly for prayer and sort of chatting together. Rob has this insight, and I sort of have an idle comment, and suddenly Rob will say, "Oh my gosh." And he draws something out of my idle comment that is wisdom far beyond my capacity. Dawn has an amazing gift for gentleness but strength, as no doubt Rob experienced when she said she wasn't going to marry him unless he became a Christian. And together they are a wonderful family, wonderful couple, wonderful friends, and wonderful servants of our God. And I know that just as we've been blessed for over 30 years knowing them, we've all been blessed this morning for more than 30 minutes hearing from them. And we just want to say thank you to you both and to God for bringing you here and bring us all here. Can I just thank again the men's breakfast team for allowing women on? This is very progressive, isn't it? And I wish you all a wonderful Christmas season and the blessings of knowing Jesus in our lives. Thank you very much, Rob and Dawn.